Audio from the March 2011 International Women's Day Tour of Dublin.
Brilliant. This is our last stop, and we'll be on for juice and buns and things very soon in the exchange. Where we are now, it's the Amnesty offices, but it's also the offices of the Irish Women's Workers Union. At the beginning of the 20th century, working conditions in Dublin were deplorable. About a fifth of people were unemployed, and because labour was in surplus, most of the people who were unionised came from skilled trades. And this is a particular difficulty for women, because most women worked in unskilled trades. They worked as labourers on farms, only trying to earn enough money to emigrate, or they worked in ones and twos in big houses as domestic servants. So it was very difficult to organise. As I said, there wasn't a huge amount of unionisation in Ireland until 1909, when the militant Irish General Transport Workers' Union was formed by James Larkin. Now, there was very little place for women, and only two unions accepted women, the INTO and the Drapers Association. Women only earned half the pay of male unskilled workers, and one-sixth of that earned by skilled men. But that was to change in 1911, when Delia Larkin, the sister of Jim Larkin, set up the Irish Women's Workers' Union, whose headquarters was in this building here. The Irish Women's Workers' Union came into their own in 1913 when the unions of Ireland faced one of its biggest challenges. William Martin Murphy, the owner of several newspapers and the Dublin Tramways Company, suspended all the members of the ITGWU if they didn't resign their membership. And on the morning of August 26, 1913, at 10 o'clock, the trammen walked off their jobs. One of the first unions to come out in support of the men was the women who worked as packers for Jacobs, led by a young woman called Rosie Hackett. When Jacobs let go of several of the workers involved in the demonstrations against employers, Hackett also led the strike in support of the suspended workers. The strike was a long and bloody one, with the striking workers enduring the direst poverty. It was clear, however, that the unions were fighting a losing battle, and in January 1914, the workers began returning to work. The last group to return to work were the women of the Jacobs Biscuit Factory, led by Rosie Hackett, who held out until mid-March. Following the lockout, the membership of the IWWU was greatly reduced. Rosie Hackett never went back to work, as she was marginalised and bullied by her employers for her role in the strikes. Women's trade unions were to endure several difficult decades following the 1913 lockout. Unemployment remained high, and male unions traditionally viewed women's increasing participation in the workforce as a threat to male employment. They blamed male unemployment with the fact that women wanted to work, rather than because of the prevailing economic conditions. In fact, the stories were the opposite. Stories of men taking over jobs from women was the norm. Marriage bars existed in all white-collar jobs, and many women in industrial jobs resigned upon getting married. Women's jobs, even when doing comparable work, were always lower paid. Louis Bennett, the founder of the IWWU, often argued that women's work was a necessity rather than a right. Further evidence of the hostile environment women's trade unions had to exist in was the marriage bar, which was supported by all of the trade unions, including the INTO, which had mainly female membership, apart from the Irish Women's Workers' Union. Throughout its existence, the Irish Women's Workers' Union spearheaded campaigns to improve working conditions. In 1945, they held a three-month strike, securing 2 weeks of paid holiday for laundry workers, which soon became the industrial norm. Equal pay was rarely on the agenda, and employment was falling. Emigration was rising, and most people were preoccupied with keeping their jobs. Also, with the birth rate declining, it was women workers who were blamed. They were working instead of marrying and having babies. After fighting numerous battles for women's equality, the IWWU merged with the Federated Workers' Union in 1984. The Irish Women's Workers' Union, during their time, involved themselves in several campaigns, including changing the constitution so that women's place was outside of was no longer confined to in the home, they secured 2 weeks holidays, which became the industrial norm, and also struggled hard for equal pay for equal work. Today, women's participation in unions is finally tipping over towards an equal balance, though women rarely hold high-profile roles within the unions. Nearly all of the general secretaries of our unions are men, despite representing huge numbers of women. In 1984, a young chill woman called Mary Manning, 21-year-old cashier from the Mandate Trade Union, was working in Dunn Stores. And Mandate had passed a motion at their previous conference saying that no member should have to handle South African goods. Now, just like the women of the Ladies Land League, Mary Manning decided that this meant that she should actually not handle South African goods. So when a woman appeared at the cash register with South African oranges, Mary Manning refused to handle them. This triggered one of the longest strikes in modern Irish history, when 10 young women and one young man walked a picket line outside Dunn Stores on Henry Street, until eventually the Irish government boycotted South African goods. A street was named after Mary Manning in South Africa, but it was only in the last number of years that a plaque was laid to the achievement of those women who helped draw international attention to the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. Mary and her colleagues became a household name in South Africa and were commemorated in the song by Christy Moore, 10 Young Women and One Young Man. So that's it for the Feminist Walking Tour 2011. Thank you all for coming. We have tea and juice and cake in the exchange just down the road, and we'll show you the way now.
This audio was recorded on the March 20th, 11th International Women's Day Walking Tour of Dublin. The tour was organised by Choice Ireland, Lashback and RAG. For more information, see Article 99130 on indymedia.ie.